Okay. So we're at a point in the Khuzari, a very famous stage in the end of the first Mamar, in which the Khuzar king had challenged Rabbi Yehuda Halevi about the Egel HaZav, the Jewish people. And this was a specific challenge because in the Khuzari system, you can't discover Hashem philosophically, as the Rambam's premise suggests, that if you're just smart enough, you can understand Hashem gave us a shortcut. In Rabbi Yehuda Halevi's world, Hashem has to reveal himself through Nevuah, and Hashem decided to reveal himself directly to Am Yisrael. So it's a direct delivery. So wait a second. So then if they sinned at the Egel, how did they recover? They ruined it. So Yehuda Levi's response, again, just to summarize, because we haven't talked about it in a few days, is number one, the potential for Nevuah, which is one of the two poles of Am Yisrael's selection, A, the ability to receive Hashem's prophecy, B, the ability to operate supernaturally above the rules of nature, above the rules of normal nations. That's a potential. Sometimes that potential is fulfilled, sometimes that potential is ignored. But it's never eliminated. So even though they sinned in the Egel, that potential to receive Nevuah still existed. The second part, which is more important and thematically central to Sefer HaKuzari, is, remember, the whole premise of this Sefer HaKuzari is this king of the Khuzars has a dream in which Kavanascha Ritzuya, your intentions and your internal life is appropriate, but Ma'asecha Einam Ritzuyim, but your activities aren't appropriate. Namely, it's not just Judaism, it's not just about the right intention and then freelancing and expressing as you choose, but following HaKadosh Baruch Hu's detailed system of mitzvahs. And the Egel turned out to be a great educational moment because 3,000 people thought they could serve Hashem differently. Their kavanas were appropriate. They wanted to find a physical reference to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as they were promised with the Luchos, as they had experienced with the Anan HaKavod. They thought this had sanctioned and invalidated it. So they freelanced, they chose their own Egel, and Hashem said, this is not what I want. So the Egel, ironically, which was raised by the Khuzar king to challenge the Khuzari, the Rabbi Yehuda Halevi's system, ends up being an educational pole of the system. At that moment, he restates the fact with Korbanos. Korbanos is a very, 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 very rigid system. What difference does it make if you shech the animal here or shech the animal there or sprinkle this amount of blood or that amount of blood or this type of animal, that type of animal? Yet the Torah gives very, very distinct instructions. Now, we typically feel that maybe Korbanos is a, not hyperbole, but an point of emphasis, because you're standing in the base of Mikdash, and when you're standing in the base of Mikdash, there's less room for flexibility. Now, the Benavio made that mistake. They thought they could offer a special Korban, given the special day, and they literally suffered the consequences. They were burnt for it, and as we would say, they were incinerated. But for Yehuda Halevi, the Korbanos is not exceptional, it's rather reflective and prototypical. It's reflective of the whole system. Again, even though you walk into the base of Mikdash and your kavanos are fantastic and virtuous and noble, if you don't follow the system of the korbanos, then it's not serving Hashem, because again, HaKadosh Baruch Hu reveals himself and gives a detailed manner into which to receive his nevuah and to serve him. What makes Rabbi Yehuda Halevi's presentation of korbanos unique is not just that they're not exceptional, but they're reflective, but A, B, they're so detailed. It's one thing to say, look, you can't reroute Avodas Hashem to the Egel HaZav, because that's a real aberrant deviance, because you're establishing an Egel, you're looking at a calf. But in real halacha, I have to follow the rules, but I have to follow the details and the picayune, idiosyncratic little details of Shabbos and of Shemitah. So the answer is, So that's what Korbanos conveys. It's not just the generalities that have to be specific and coordinated, but also the details. And not just the Korbanos, but also the Mishkan. The Mishkan is described in four parshiyos, Truma, Tetzava, Ba'akal, Pekudei, even though it's just a temporary building. Rosh Baruch Hu gives him very specific details and then in actual blueprints. David HaMelech has the spiritual base on Mikdash conceived, but he doesn't build it until Shlomo actually translates it into a physical document with direct details from Hashem. And even the third base of Mikdash, which you would think would be transcendent and ahistorical and celestial and beyond time, Yechezkel is given the very, very specific dimensions of the third base of Mikdash. The second difference is that he compares Korbanos to nature. If you look at nature, nature is a very, very delicate balance of different organisms, ecosystems, temperatures, hormones. If the temperature rises even slightly, entire races of animals will become extinct. If temperature dips slightly, animals, our own homeostasis will be suspended. Obviously, the ecosystem is very, very delicate. The devils, as we say, in the details, in nature, you'll begin to appreciate how important each detail is. Because if you study nature very carefully, you'll see how one slight change in a detail could wreck the entire system. Now, of course, we all believe that everything comes from Hashem. So whatever we see in nature overlaps with the world of religion. Religion isn't separate from nature. Right? Chazal said, the Gemara in Erevin, that if you didn't have Torah, you could learn Tznius from a cat, and you could learn industry from an ant, and you could learn Gezel from a sexual mores from a chicken. Essentially, we feel that if nature is Hashem's creation, then by looking at nature, we see repeating patterns that Hashem created our reality, and those can be imported into the world of religion, into the world of ritual. So here he establishes a correspondence between the detailed codependency of Korbanos and the detailed codependency of nature. I suspect, although I don't know, because Korbanos, the Gemara says in Tainus, that's why we have the Mamados, support the world. Not for Korbanos, the world would collapse. That's why they read Sefer Bereishis each day of the Mamados, corresponding to another carbon. People who were delegates for the carbon tumid read from Bereishis, because Maisa Bereishis is dependent upon Korbanos. Even though we think Korbanos are parochial, Korbanos are really universal. So I wonder if Rabbi Yehuda Levi's correspondence and association between Korbanos and nature tries to convey this message implicitly. It's not explicit, but he does convey it. Okay. Then he moves to Nevuah, and it's almost as if at a certain point in the Kuzari, Yehuda Levi turns to the king and says, the Chaver turns to the king and says, aren't you listening to me? Because the king again is pelting him with, if Hashem reveals himself, why doesn't he reveal himself to everyone rather than just to the Jewish people? And Yehuda Levi says, I told you this already, that there's a special Inyan Eloki that makes the Jewish people capable of receiving Nevuah and capable of living beyond the laws of nature. And that's not something which can be just simply spread across the entire world. And Hashem gave it to a certain race, and it's genetic, and they pass it down from Adam to Hevel, then after he dies to Shes, then to Noach, then to Aver, then to Avram, then to... It's not something that can be spread. And the other nations of the world are like klipos. Again, in our modern world, klipos are skins and peels, which we just discard. But in an agricultural setting, peels are part of the fruit, and you use it as part of the fruit, and you grow the peels, and they protect the fruit. So, again, this is probably the core conundrum of the Sefer HaKuzari. On the one hand, there's a chosen race, and on the one hand, it's very national, and only the Jews can receive. But there's the universalism that you have to actually read the Kuzari to sense it. It's not just saying, therefore, the Jews go to Olam Haba. No, it's through the Jews, there's a certain broader impact upon the human race and human history and human anthropology that can't be delivered in a universalist fashion, but does have universalist manifestations. And then he says something very interesting. He just says it by the by, but it's going to be important for tomorrow's year. And he says, and this Nevuah that Jews receive, don't just think that it only affects the Nevi'im who reach that level of direct prophecy, but any encounter you have with a Navi leaves a lasting impact on you. And part of that lasting impact is you realize how surpassing the separation between body and guf is, and how eternal the soul and body, and how eternal the soul is. And when you see a Navi isn't just on a computer receiving information. The Navi, there's a perfection of the soul and a bit of a severing between the soul and the body. And you see the high madrega that a person can reach when their soul is no longer anchored and no longer inhibited by the physicality of the body. And that leaves you inspired, and that leaves you desirous of Olam Haba. And then I'll get to Olam Haba in the next section. We'll talk about this a little bit tomorrow, because Olam Haba is really the separation between the body, which dies and decomposes and terminates, and the spirit and the soul, which lives eternally in the presence of Hashem, seeing HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So here he transitions from the discussion of the Korbanos and the discussion of the special quality of Am Yisrael, which is Nevuah. While he's talking about Nevuah, he talks about Nevuah as something which impacts not just the Navi, but people who witness or encounter the Navi. That impact is to highlight and to create desire for the state where the soul is separate from the body, the state of eternity, the state of intellectual / religious experience uninhibited by the body, which composes Olam Haba. Now he's going to shift into a very famous conversation of Olam Haba, which takes place primarily in the end of the first Mamar. So we'll talk a little bit tomorrow about Olam Haba, about the Rambam's view of Olam Haba, how the Kuzari is related, slightly different, but pretty much related. Okay. Have a good week, everyone.